He was the CEO of a billion-dollar empire, feared, untouchable, and addicted to control. Until I walked in wearing 5-inch heels and a smile sharp enough to cut glass. He thought I was just his assistant, but I became his obsession, his secret, his downfall. I didn't fuck my way to the top. I made him kneel. And when the empire crumbled, I didn't run. I took his office, his power, and left him worshiping the heels that ruined him. This isn't a love story. It's a power play. And baby, I never lose. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Heels on His Heart. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Interview. They say you never get a second chance to make a first impression, but I never needed one. Because when I walk into a room, I don't just arrive, I enter. And every eye turns like it's been summoned. Every pulse stutters like it forgot its job. I don't need to say a word. My presence writes its own script. Confidence is my perfume. And today I wore it like war paint. Red. Not that cheap, flashy red that screams desperation or a clearance rack attempt at confidence. I wore deep, sultry Cabernet red. The kind of red that belongs in a glass you sip slowly on a rooftop after fucking someone who'll never forget you. My blouse was silk, hugging my body like it knew secrets the world wasn't ready for. I paired it with a black, high-waisted pencil skirt that showed off every curve I never once apologized for, and heels, 4-inch stilettos with a patent leather finish and crimson soles sharp enough to draw blood. I wanted him to bleed for me before I even knew his name. Stone and Weller towered above the street like it owned the skyline, glass, steel, and ego. The kind of place where assistants were treated like coffee-fetching wallpaper, and the executive suites reeked of money, lust, and power barely restrained by HR policies. I'd done my homework. The company made millions consulting for Fortune 500 giants, rebranding their public fuck-ups into palatable press releases. But the only branding I was concerned with was my own. My name, my ambition, my seduction. Because I wasn't applying to be an assistant. I was applying to be unforgettable. I strutted across the lobby, heels clicking against the imported marble like a countdown to sin. Heads turned. Men glanced. Women assessed. Security guards straightened up. The receptionist, a too young thing with fear in her posture, blinked like I'd broken her screensaver. "Good morning," I said, voice velvet wrapped and dipped in intent. "Delaney Reeve, here for the 10 o'clock with Mr. Carter." She stammered, her eyes darting to the slit in my skirt that ended dangerously close to the promises my thighs could make. "Yes, yes, Miss Reeve. Please have a seat. He'll be with you shortly." I didn't sit. I posed, legs crossed, back straight, one heel dangling off my toe like temptation on a string. I checked my phone, not for messages, I had none I cared about, but just to complete the illusion of calm, of control, of power. Because power isn't always loud. Sometimes it's in the silence between footsteps. Sometimes it's in a glance held just a second too long. And when he walked in, Nathaniel Carter in the flesh, every molecule of that fucking lobby froze. He was taller than I expected, maybe 6'2". Lean but built, like his gym time was penciled in between billion-dollar meetings. Navy suit, white shirt, no tie. Casual in that rich, calculated way. His jawline could have cut diamonds, and his eyes, stormy gray with just a flicker of arrogance, scanned the room like he owned the air we breathed. Then he saw me, and for one breathless, beautiful second, he paused. His gaze dipped, not to my face, not to my cleavage, to my feet. It was quick, a flicker. The kind of look most women wouldn't notice. But I did. Oh, I always notice. Men like Nathaniel don't gawk. They study. They devour. And when you know what to look for, how the pupils constrict, how the nostrils flare just slightly, how the lips twitch with forbidden thoughts, you can smell their secrets like perfume. He walked over, face unreadable but his energy chaotic. "Miss Reeve," he asked, voice low and clipped like he was already annoyed. Or intrigued. "Yes." I stood slowly, letting every inch of my body rise like it had something to prove. "This way." We walked through the halls, the silence filled only by the echo of my heels on the polished floor. I walked half a step behind him, just enough for him to feel me, but not enough to challenge his control. Yet, his office was a glass fortress with a skyline view that looked like a desktop background. Chrome, leather, and luxury. It smelled like power and cologne, and faintly barely leather. The kind used in expensive shoes. I sat before he offered, legs crossed again, heel bobbing gently. His eyes flicked there once more. That pause again. Then the mask slipped back on. Let's talk resume, he said, grabbing a folder he didn't bother opening. I tilted my head. Of course. But I'm guessing you already know everything you need to. He raised an eyebrow. You're not the type to waste time, I continued. You either saw something in me that made you curious, or you didn't. And if you didn't, I wouldn't be sitting here, would I? He didn't smile. But there was a twitch. The kind that means checkmate. I value confidence, he said finally. But this position requires more than that. It requires loyalty, discretion, attention to detail, anticipating needs before they're voiced. I leaned in slightly, voice dropping. I understand power, and how to support it intimately. Silence. The air between us thickened, electrified. His fingers tapped the desk. A nervous tick or a tell. Either way, I had him off balance. Can you handle pressure, Miss Reeve? He asked, circling the desk. I tracked his movement with my eyes, then smiled faintly. I like pressure. It shapes diamonds. Now he stood behind me. I felt his presence like heat. He was close. Closer than he should be. I expect my assistant to be professional. At all times, he said slowly. I crossed and uncrossed my legs again, deliberately, letting the heel on my right foot slip off ever so slightly. A subtle display. Just enough to show the curve of my arch. I can be very professional, I whispered. But I also adapt to my environment. Another pause. His silence was louder than any words. I turned slightly to meet his eyes. His gaze was locked below my knees. His mask cracked, just for a second. And in that second I knew. He had a weakness. And it was wrapped in black leather, 4 inches high. He blinked, snapped his gaze up, cleared his throat. You'll start Monday. No formalities. No second interviews. No HR paperwork discussed. Just desire dressed as decision-making. I stood slowly, watching him watch me. He didn't try to shake my hand again. I didn't offer it. I turned, and my heels clicked on his floor like punctuation marks on a seduction he didn't even know he'd started reading. The elevator doors closed behind me, and I caught my reflection in the mirror-like surface. Calm. Composed. Dangerous. I didn't just land a job. I found a fetish. And baby, I'm about to exploit the fuck out of it. Because men like Nathaniel Carter think they're untouchable. But every king has a kink. And this queen just stepped on his heart in heels. Chapter 2, His Eyes, My Leash. It started the moment I stepped out of the elevator on my first day. The energy. The stares. The tension so thick you could spread it on toast and serve it as office gossip. People noticed me. Of course they did. I wasn't just a new hire. I was her. The woman who didn't belong in their stiff, neutral-toned world of blazers and lanyards. My heels clacked like they were spelling out letters in Morse code. D-N-G-R. I could feel the judgment, the confusion, and, most importantly, the curiosity crawling down my legs like invisible fingers. Perfect. I dressed deliberately. Again, cream silk blouse tucked tight beneath a tailored pencil skirt that hugged my hips like a lover who never wanted to let go. No jacket. No blazer. Just skin, silk, and stilettos. Today's choice, black suede stilettos with gold heels. I wore no jewelry except a thin chain around my ankle, subtle and gleaming just above the strap. Yes, an ankle chain. Delicate. Intimate. Designed for his eyes. I didn't wear that for them. I wore it for him. Nathaniel Carter. The man with the poker face, the wallet fat enough to kill someone if dropped from a rooftop, and the kind of discipline that would make a monk blush. Unless you knew exactly where his cracks lived. And I knew now. His eyes told me everything. Even when he wasn't speaking, his silence sang. I approached the front desk where a man with a fake smile handed me my badge like I'd just won a prize he'd been secretly hoping would self-destruct. Welcome, Miss Reeve, he said, but it sounded like stay in your lane. I didn't even blink. I just smiled. Where's Mr. Carter's office? He pointed toward the far end of the executive floor. Frosted glass, silent phones, closed-door secrets. I walked the hallway slowly, each heel clicking with purpose, letting my rhythm mark the space. And then there he was. Nathaniel was standing by his office window, suit jacket off, sleeves rolled just enough to make his forearms the only skin visible. He was on the phone, his voice low, sharp, layered in authority and control. He didn't look up right away, but I knew he heard me. I stopped just inside the doorway and waited. I let him feel my presence the way a man feels heat behind him before he turns toward the sun. And finally he turned, and his gaze dipped. Again, right to the chain on my ankle. He blinked, regained composure. Hung up. "Miss Reeve," he said. "Mr. Carter." Silence. Tension stretched like lingerie about to snap. He gestured toward the desk across from his office. "That's you. I'll be pulling you into meetings. I like things handled fast. No mistakes." I nodded. "I don't make mistakes. I learn them in other people and use them as leverage." His brow arched, half impressed, half cautious. But the corner of his mouth twitched again. It was subtle, but I wasn't just anyone. I saw it. He liked the game. He just didn't know the rules were mine. The first few hours were boring on purpose. I knew how these types worked. They wanted to test your patience, see if you cracked. But I didn't. I answered emails, sorted folders, filed financial reports that reeked of tax loopholes and boardroom bullshit. Every so often, he'd step out, stand behind me for a second too long, and say nothing. Nothing. Just stand there, breathing, watching, pretending he was there for a question he never asked. That's when I started the little things. Day one was about boundaries. So I bent them. I removed my heels when I sat. Not all the way. Just enough to reveal bare skin as the straps dangled like silk shackles. I'd cross my legs slowly, deliberately. Let the sunlight from the window catch the arch of my foot. The glint of the gold chain. The shimmer of lotion on my ankle. I never looked up when I did it. That would break the illusion. No, he needed to believe he was sneaking glances. He needed to think he was in control of the voyeurism, not a pawn in it. Around noon, he came back from a meeting with that storm cloud look in his eyes. Frustrated. Distracted. Vulnerable. He walked straight into his office and closed the door. Hard. I waited 30 seconds. Then I knocked. "Come in," he barked. I stepped in slowly. Didn't say a word. Just handed him a folder he didn't need, and stood there like I owned the air he was breathing. His eyes, tired, flickering, desperate, fell to my feet again. My heels were back on. "Is there anything else?" I asked, voice calm, as if I hadn't noticed him staring. He looked up. His face was blank. But his eyes screamed things his mouth would never say. "No, that'll be all," he said tightly. I turned to leave, knowing exactly how much leg I was showing with every step. That night, I didn't go home. I prepared. I sat in a bubble bath, glass of wine in hand, and went over the day's details like a military strategist. He looked at my feet four times. He hovered behind me twice. He said my name with tension in his jaw. He cracked just once when I smiled. Control was mine now. Not fully. Not yet. But I could feel it beginning to tilt, like a building leaning, just before collapse. I researched further. His divorce was messy. No kids. His ex-wife had accused him of emotional detachment. Coldness. Work obsession. Classic high-functioning narcissism. But buried in the court documents, deep in an old statement from her deposition, was a phrase that made me smile. He made me feel like a mannequin, except for my feet. He was obsessed with my feet. Bingo. Heels. Arches. Ankles. Subservience. It all clicked. Nathaniel Carter didn't want a woman. He wanted control and submission. He wanted worship he could justify. Shame he could bury. He wanted someone to tempt him without ever saying a word. And I was born for that role. By Friday, he wasn't even hiding it anymore. He lingered in doorways. His eyes dropped when I walked in. When I handed him notes, he stared at my fingers like they were forbidden fruit. And when he accidentally brushed my ankle under the conference room table, he didn't move right away. Just let it happen. I didn't flinch. I didn't smile. I let him wonder. That night, he emailed me. Subject line. Schedule clarification. Body. "Please come to my office 7 a.m. Monday. We need to review priorities for Q2. Discretion appreciated." Discretion. Such a sexy word. I stared at the screen, wine in hand, and whispered to no one. It's starting. Chapter 3, The Submission Meeting. The elevator was quiet at 6:54 a.m. Too quiet. The kind of quiet that feels thick in your chest, like something's about to happen. Like the building itself knows it's about to witness something unprofessional, unholy, and unforgettable. And I intended to give it a show. The halls were still dark when I stepped onto the executive floor. The motion sensor lights blinked on one by one with each click of my heels, illuminating the corridor in a soft, sterile glow. The place felt like a cathedral, hollow, reverent, hiding secrets in its air vents. No clacking keyboards. No fake laughs. No water cooler chit-chat. Just me, the hum of expensive electricity, and the taste of power on my tongue. I wore a black button-down dress. Silk. Slit up the side. Formal enough to pass for corporate, tight enough to pull every eye into gravity. Underneath it, a lace bra that wasn't for comfort, and panties I'd gladly leave behind on his office floor if the opportunity arose. But the real weapon? The shoes. 5 inches this time, gunmetal gray with silver buckles. Straps wrapping up my ankles like a whispered promise. No red sole today. Today wasn't about screaming for attention. It was about control. Subtle. Silent. Strategic. I wasn't here to seduce him. I was here to unravel him. I knocked on his office door at 6:58. Punctual. Predictable. Polished. "Come in," he said, and the sound of his voice was different this time, gravelly tight like he hadn't slept or hadn't stopped thinking about me. I stepped inside and shut the door gently behind me. The blinds were half closed, city lights still shimmering against the glass like the night hadn't fully let go. He sat behind his desk, sleeves already rolled up, no jacket, the top button of his shirt undone. No tie. Again. Interesting. His eyes lifted, slowly, and when they met mine, there was a flicker of hesitation. Like part of him wanted to be stern and detached, and the other part, the buried, hungry part, was ready to confess to every dirty thought he'd ever had since I walked through his door. "Good morning," I said, walking toward the desk with calm, measured confidence. He nodded once. "Have a seat." I did. Slowly. Legs crossed, dress rising just high enough to make him notice. He didn't say anything for a few seconds. He just stared. At me. At my legs. At my shoes. "I appreciate you coming in early," he finally said, voice smooth on the surface but cracked underneath. "There are a few sensitive matters I wanted to address without distraction." Distraction, he meant people. Eyes. Witnesses. Guilt. "Of course," I replied, tilting my head slightly. "Discretion is my specialty." His fingers tapped the desk once. Twice. Then he stood up abruptly, walked to the window, and stood there in silence. He didn't turn around. He was stalling, gathering strength, trying to suppress the urge that had been clawing at his skin all week. "Good. That meant he was breaking. I run this company with a strict code of conduct," he said after a long pause. "I don't tolerate blurred lines." "MMM," I hummed, tracing the strap of my heel with one finger. "That's funny." He turned sharply. "What is?" "You asked me to come here at 7 a.m. alone. Unannounced. With discretion." I smiled sweetly. "That's not blurry. That's intentional." His jaw tensed. I didn't blink. The silence stretched again. He was looking for a way out, and he couldn't find one. "Are you accusing me of something?" he asked, but his voice was thinner now, less confident. "No," I said softly. "I'm acknowledging that I see you." He took a slow step toward me. My heart didn't race. My breath didn't catch. Because I was in control. I always was. "You're very bold, Miss Reeve." I uncrossed my legs, slow and deliberate. "Not bold. Honest." He watched as I stood, heels clicking softly on the hardwood. We were inches apart now. Close enough to smell his cologne, bergamot and cedar and tension. I lifted my foot and placed it gently on the edge of his desk. "Just one." His breath hitched. He looked like a man trying to hold onto a dam that had already cracked. I didn't move. I didn't blink. I just let him look. Then I said it. "The thing that changed everything. I know what you want." He froze. "Excuse me? I've seen the way you look at my feet," I continued. "Calm. Controlled. You think you're subtle. You're not. You stare. You hesitate. You fantasize. And then you punish yourself for it." His face paled slightly. I lowered my foot slowly, heel brushing against his thigh as I did. "Not accidental. Deliberate. Do you want to fire me now?" I asked. He didn't speak. "I can walk out." Or what?" he asked hoarse. "Or," I whispered, "we can be honest." He stepped back like I'd struck him, hands at his sides, eyes wild. "I don't. I'm not." "Yes, you are," I said, walking around the desk toward him, slow as sin. "You are exactly what I think you are. And I'm not here to shame you." I stood close. Too close. "I'm here to give you permission." He swallowed hard. The air between us buzzed. "I don't need permission," he said, but his voice betrayed him. "Yes, you do," I whispered. "You need someone to take control so you can finally let go." I leaned closer, my lips a breath from his ear. "Get on your knees." He didn't move. His eyes darted, fear, lust, panic, shame, all colliding in his skull like a car crash of conflicting identities. "I," he stammered. "We can't." "I'm not asking," I said coldly. "I'm telling." And slowly, so slowly I thought I might come from the sight alone, he dropped. To his knees. Right there. in his high-rise corner office. At 7:03 in the morning, the King of Stone and Weller on the floor in front of me, looking up like he'd found God, and she was wearing 5-inch heels. I took a step closer, letting the tip of my shoe hover near his chest. He looked like he might cry, or beg, or both. "You've wanted this since the moment you saw me," I said. "Didn't you?" He nodded. "Say it." "Aye," his voice cracked. "Yes." I let the silence hang. Let him sit in it. Let the weight of what just happened sink deep into his soul like ink in wet paper. "You don't speak unless I give you permission," I said finally. He nodded again. And in that moment, I wasn't just his assistant. I wasn't just a woman in heels. I was the leash on his desires, the gatekeeper to his guilt, the storm inside his perfectly manicured world. And I had just become the most dangerous person in the building. Chapter 4. Leather, Leverage, and Lies. Power doesn't come from shouting. It comes from the whispers no one else hears, the looks no one else sees, the strings no one notices you pulling, until they're already tied up in them. By Monday evening, I had him on those strings. Nathaniel Carter, CEO, feared executive, cold-blooded strategist, had kneeled at my feet that morning like I was some kind of deity. But I didn't need him to worship me just once. No, I needed to own him, his breath, his body, his decisions. I wanted him tangled in so much guilt and lust that he couldn't make a single move without checking how it might affect us. Except there was no us. There was only me, and how far I could take this. I left his office that morning without a kiss, a touch, or even a final glance. I simply stepped back into my heels and walked out, head high, spine straight, leaving him kneeling in silence, humiliated and addicted. Not a word was spoken between us for the rest of the day. But the tension? It followed us like perfume. He couldn't look me in the eye. Not when I brought him coffee. Not when I handed him a report. Not when I walked past his office door and felt his gaze trace the outline of my legs like a ghost touching a memory. I didn't need his words. His silence was louder than anything he could have said. He belonged to me now, and he didn't even know how deep it would go. Tuesday, the first offering. It arrived in a box. Black matte. No note. No label. I found it on my desk when I arrived. Early. As always. I didn't need to open it to know it was from him. The packaging itself whispered secrecy. Guilt. Shame wrapped in luxury. I slid the lid open. Inside was a single pair of heels. Handmade. Black leather. Red insoles. Gold hardware. 5.5 inches. Pure fucking elegance. They were art. Sex. Worship disguised as fashion. I didn't smile. I didn't blush. I didn't act like a girl surprised by attention. No. I slid them on immediately. The leather hugged my feet like it knew it didn't belong to me. Like it was owned by the man who'd gotten hard watching me slip them on in his imagination 1,000 times. At 9:04 a.m., I walked past his office with those heels clicking like bullets. He looked up for just a second. His pupils dilated. His lips parted. And then he quickly looked away. Good. He was still ashamed. Still scared. Still mine. Wednesday, the test. Midweek meetings meant boardroom time. Executives. Investors. PR parasites. And him, sitting at the head of the table like nothing had changed. I arrived last, always a little late, always worth the wait. My outfit? Innocent. Ivory blouse. Long skirt. Hair tied up. Glasses, even. But the shoes. Oh, the shoes. Those heels he'd gifted me. Clicking down the hall like sin in surround sound. The men in the room barely glanced up. Most of them didn't even register my presence beyond the polite nod they gave every assistant. But Nathaniel? He was staring before I opened the damn door. I took the seat beside him. Deliberate. Silent. Poised. He cleared his throat. Let's begin. As they argued about quarterly projections and international shipping costs, I crossed my legs and let my heel dangle, swinging ever so gently back and forth. The gold buckle caught the light and sent it dancing across the polished table. I didn't look at him, but I felt him looking at me. Every fucking second, the tension wrapped around his throat like a noose. His hands trembled when he reached for his pen. His voice cracked once, just once, and it was so subtle that only someone studying him would have caught it. And I was studying him like he was a book written in lust and fear. Then, mid-meeting, I leaned over and whispered softly enough that no one else could hear. Thank you for the heels. They're beautiful. Do you want to see what they look like when I step on your chest? His body jerked like I'd tasered him. His fingers gripped the edge of the table. His jaw clenched so tightly I could hear the pressure in his molars. I leaned back, casually, as if I hadn't just shattered his concentration. He called a break 2 minutes later. He didn't speak to me for the rest of the day. He didn't have to. The leash was tightening. Thursday, the threat. By Thursday, I could feel the paranoia brewing behind his eyes. He began double-checking every door, looking over his shoulder before entering rooms, avoiding extended eye contact like it might burn him. The thing about men like Nathaniel is they build their entire identity on control of their schedule, their staff, their secrets. And I had become his biggest secret, which meant I held the detonator. Mid-afternoon, he sent me a message through our internal chat system. Nathaniel Carter, we need to discuss boundaries. Meet me in conference room B at 5:15. No one else will be around. Boundaries. Cute. I waited 10 minutes past the time on purpose, then walked in slowly. He was pacing. When he saw me, he exhaled hard, like he'd been holding his breath since Tuesday. You're pushing too far, he said. No, I replied, stepping toward him. I'm pushing you. His eyes narrowed. People are noticing. You stare too long. You wear things. Things you like me to wear. That's not the point. It is exactly the point, I snapped, stepping into his space. You bought me shoes. You begged with your eyes. You kneeled. And now you're panicking because it felt too good. I could fire you, he said. I smiled. But you won't. He didn't deny it. You need this, I whispered. You need someone to break you down when no one else is watching. You need your ego split in half and fed back to you with a smile. His face went blank. Defeated. Desperate. You're going to keep giving me gifts, I said. You're going to keep watching me. You're going to follow every unspoken rule I write for you in silence. And if I don't, I leaned in and whispered against his ear. I'll kneel in the lobby and show them the bruises on my knees and say your name. He paled. I stepped back. This is no longer a flirtation. It's a contract. One I'm writing. Then I left him there. Speechless. Shaken. Completely, utterly mine. Friday, the proof. By Friday, my desk drawer had 3 new pairs of shoes in it. No notes. No packaging. Just offerings. My calendar had 1 new meeting invite. Weekly priorities, private review, 6:30 a.m. Same room. Same time. New rules. And Nathaniel? He still wouldn't look me in the eyes in front of anyone else. But in private, he'd already begun learning how to crawl. Chapter 5, The Favor Economy. It started with a door code. An ordinary little beep. One morning I arrived early. Earlier than usual. And instead of waiting for Nathaniel to buzz me in, I found a sticky note on the inside of the private elevator. 7819, don't forget. No signature. No explanation. But I didn't need one. It was the access code to his executive wing. That door, usually locked, guarded, protected, opened to me now. Not HR. Not even the CFO. Just me. With 4 digits, Nathaniel Carter gave me his trust. Or maybe it wasn't trust at all. Maybe it was desperation, cloaked in convenience. Either way, I walked through that glass security door like it was my own personal red carpet. My heels echoed louder inside that quiet corridor, each step a reminder that this place, his sanctuary, was mine now. I slid into my desk without knocking on his office door. I could see his silhouette through the frosted glass. He didn't acknowledge me. He didn't have to. This wasn't about greetings anymore. This was about territory. I took out my compact mirror, touched up my lipstick, crossed my legs slowly, and began orchestrating the next level of our game. Leverage. The thing about power is, once you taste it, you don't just want more, you need more. And not just over one person. Over the room. Over the system. Over the entire goddamn ecosystem that feeds the man you've already broken. I began watching more than Nathaniel. I watched them. The other execs. The department heads. The ones who whispered things they thought assistants couldn't hear. The ones who rolled their eyes at female interns, flirted with the receptionists, passed judgment like breath mints at meetings. I started collecting. Not files. Not numbers. Weaknesses. Charlie from marketing had a drinking problem. I could smell it on his breath after lunch. Liza from PR was sleeping with one of the junior designers. Darren, the VP of finance, used company resources to fund some very private renovations at his vacation home in the Hamptons. None of this shocked me. Men like these always left trails. You just had to look where no one else dared. And I looked. But I didn't expose any of them. Not yet. Because power isn't about destruction. It's about possession. And I was building a kingdom. Requests. It began subtly. A new chair for my desk. I told Nathaniel the old one was uncomfortable. He didn't ask follow-up questions. A Herman Miller model arrived the next morning. Next, I accidentally dropped hints about the elevator being slow during peak hours. By Friday, I had my own override key for the service elevator. No more waiting with the assistants or junior staff. Just me rising above them, literally. Then came the admin budget. I opened the spreadsheet one morning and found that my monthly expense allocation had quietly doubled. No explanation. No oversight. Just more room to move. I started billing things that had nothing to do with work. Lunches at hotels, car services, new heels. All approved. He never questioned any of it. Because at this point, Nathaniel was no longer managing a company. He was managing me, and losing control by the minute. The unspoken meetings. He stopped scheduling them after a while. There were no more 6:30 a.m. invites or fake calendar holds. Instead, I'd walk into his office around sunrise. No knocking. No small talk. He'd already be waiting, sometimes at his desk, sometimes kneeling behind it like a sinner at a confessional. He stopped asking me to justify myself. He didn't need to. One morning, I walked in and found him completely still, his eyes on the floor, his tie undone. "Close your eyes," I whispered. He did. I walked slowly around his chair, letting the tip of my heel graze the hardwood. Then, I lifted one leg and placed the arch of my foot on his shoulder. "You know I could ruin you, right?" I said. He nodded, eyes still closed. "Say it. You could ruin me." I pushed slightly with my foot. "And yet here you are. I want to be ruined." God. The way he said it. Soft. Choked. Like he hated himself for meaning it, but loved the pain in every syllable. I didn't need to touch him. I didn't need to fuck him. That was the brilliance of it. I never had to give him what he wanted. Just the suggestion of it. The maybe. The someday. Hope is the most addictive drug in the world. And he was overdosing on it. Whispers and eyes. The others started noticing. They didn't have proof. Just questions. They whispered when I walked past. Not always cruel, sometimes envious, sometimes unsure. But always curious. I was getting invited to executive lunches. Not as a note taker. As a plus one. I got questions directed at me in meetings. "Delaney, what's your take on this?" It was almost funny. None of them could say what I did. Because I did nothing. I was just always there. Always in the room. Always looking immaculate. Always stepping just ahead of the assistant title. There was one moment I won't forget. After a tense quarterly review, where profits dipped and tempers flared, Nathaniel stormed out of the boardroom. Everyone sat in silence. I stood, calm, composed. "He'll want to pivot toward long-term assets," I said. "And he'll cut recruitment first. Brace your departments." Every head turned. "Did he tell you that?" someone asked. "No," I said. "But I know him." And I did. Better than they ever would. Because they only saw the man in the suit. I saw the man on the floor. Control is a language. That weekend, he texted me for the first time. No email. No formal request. Just, "I need to see you." I didn't reply. I let him sit in silence. Sit with need. Sit with longing. 3 hours later, another message. "Please." Still. I waited. By Sunday night, I replied. "Send a car." Monday. 5 a.m. No address. No emoji. No warmth. Just a command. And he followed it. Because by now he knew. I wasn't just playing the game. I was the game. Chapter 6. Cracks in the glass. Power is a performance. But control. Control is an illusion you sell so well, people forget to ask for proof. By now, I was more than Nathaniel Carter's assistant. I was his silence. His shame. His sanctuary. And his favorite sin. But every empire built on secrets eventually invites someone to go looking for the cracks. And the first fracture came in the form of a woman named Leah, executive assistant to the chief operating officer. For years with the company, tailored blazers, neutral lipsticks, the kind of woman who believed in punctuality, HR policies, and power through proximity. She didn't like me. She didn't have to say it. The passive-aggressive glances, the way she suddenly started hovering in the kitchen every time I came in for coffee, the sharp little hmm. When I walked into meetings like I owned the fucking floor. Yeah, she hated me. Because she knew. She didn't have proof. But women like us? We don't need evidence. We feel it. We smell it in the air. We hear it in the way a man's voice changes when you're mentioned. We see it in the way he stiffens when we enter the room, the way he unconsciously adjusts his tie, runs a hand over his mouth like he's silencing thoughts he shouldn't be having. Leah was on to me, and that made her dangerous. The morning he broke. Monday, 5 a.m. The town car pulled up to my building just like I instructed. No text. No knock. Just obedience. Nathaniel was already inside, back seat, wearing a black wool coat over his usual pressed shirt and slacks. He looked like a man going to confession, and I was the high priestess of his absolution. I slid in beside him without a word, crossed my legs slowly, wore heels that could cut diamonds, glossed lips, eyes unreadable. "You look," he started, then stopped. "Incredible." "Good," I said softly. "Because you're about to suffer." His breath caught. I leaned close. "Do you remember what you said last week? On your knees. When you begged to be ruined." He nodded. "Today's your test," I whispered. "You're going to follow my instructions to the letter. No questions. No hesitation." "Yes." "Yes what?" He hesitated. I slapped his thigh, not hard, just enough. "Yes, Miss Reeve," he said. "Good boy." The car rolled through the sleeping city. I gave him his first instruction: remove his belt. He did it silently, sliding the leather free and handing it to me like a schoolboy surrendering contraband. Then I handed him something of mine, a thin black choker with a silver ring in the center. He stared at it like it was a noose made of sex and guilt. "Put it on," I said. And he did, just like that. The man with 10 floors under his name, a multi-million dollar portfolio, a company-wide reputation for being cold, calculated, ruthless. Sitting beside me in a car at dawn, wearing a collar like a house pet. My power over him wasn't sexual. It was spiritual. I'd reached inside and wrapped my fingers around the place he didn't even know existed until I showed it to him. And now he needed me to squeeze it just to feel alive. The office heatwave. The next few days blurred into each other. The lines between professionalism and perversion? Gone. He stopped resisting. Stopped pretending. He no longer tried to hide how he looked at me when I passed his office. No longer avoided proximity. He didn't care anymore about rules, about reputation, about restraint. And that scared everyone else. It started with whispers. The kind that slithered through the hallways, through private Slack channels and muted phone calls. "She's always in his office. Did you see her shoes today? That's not office appropriate. I think she's sleeping with him." But I wasn't. That was the brilliance of it. We hadn't even kissed. Not once. And yet I owned him in ways a thousand blowjobs never could. He was addicted to the leash, to the denial, to the constant state of wanting and not having. Every time he tried to assert control, I flipped it on him. At lunch one afternoon, he made the mistake of placing his hand on the small of my back in the hallway. In front of Leah, her eyes snapped to the contact like a bloodhound catching a scent. I turned and smiled at him, then said, loud enough for everyone to hear, "Keep your hands to yourself, Mr. Carter." His face dropped. Embarrassed. Caught. The hallway fell silent. He didn't touch me again, but the damage was done. And Leah? Leah went to HR. The warning. Her email wasn't subtle. Subject: unprofessional conduct, Mr. Carter and Miss Reeve. To HR director. CC legal counsel. Attachment: for blurry screenshots from security footage. Nothing conclusive. No smoking gun. Just shadows of me walking into his office at early hours. Lingering glances. That one moment with his hand. But it was enough to raise eyebrows. Enough to plant seeds. I knew about it before Nathaniel did. Because the HR director? Tanya? She owed me a favor. 2 weeks ago, I caught her crying in the women's bathroom, mascara bleeding down her face, phone clutched in her shaking hands. Her husband was cheating. I listened. I handed her tissues. I told her how I once tracked a man's burner phone using his Google activity. By the end of that conversation, I had Tanya's loyalty. So when Leah sent that email, Tanya forwarded it to me before it even reached Nathaniel's inbox. I printed it, walked into his office, dropped it on his desk. "Your dog is barking," I said. He looked confused for a second, then paled when he read the subject line. "She's jealous," I continued. "You humiliated her by favoring me. She smells weakness." He sat back in his chair, exhaling hard. "What should I do?" I leaned over, heels clicking as I stepped close. "You don't do anything." "I don't." "No, I do." The retaliation. I cornered Leah the next day. In the break room. No audience. Just the two of us. She was pouring coffee. I was pouring poison. "You know what your mistake was?" I asked sweetly. She turned, eyebrows raised, that tight little smirk women wear when they think they've won something. "You underestimated me," I continued. "You thought you were dealing with some girl who fucked her way into an office." She didn't reply. "I don't fuck up," I whispered. "I fuck forward. I build. I manipulate. I make kings kneel. Her hand trembled slightly, coffee splashing onto her blouse. I stepped closer. And if you ever send another email with my name in it, I'll make sure your tax fraud becomes a company-wide conversation. Those PayPal invoices from your side hustle? Cute. Illegal, but cute. Her face went pale. And Leah, I said, turning to leave. This is me being nice. The fallout. By Friday, Leah had withdrawn the complaint. Tanya investigated and found no inappropriate behavior. Nathaniel didn't say a word to me about it, but he did send another gift, a red leather box. Inside, a silver key with a tag that read, Parking Garage, P3, space number 28. I went down after hours, heels echoing through the empty structure, and found a black Porsche sitting there with the engine still warm. No note, just the car. He was trying to buy silence, trying to thank me, trying to keep me, but what he didn't know was he never had to, because I was already going to burn this whole building down. Chapter 7. The Fall That Made Me Rise. Every empire falls. And sometimes the person who built it is the same one who brings it to its knees. Nathaniel Carter was once a man feared by an entire floor of executive minds. They worshipped his mind, quoted his boardroom decrees, and whispered about his cold eyes like they were carved from granite. But beneath the surface, beneath the suit, the salary, the prestige, there was a man who wanted to be broken. And I broke him. Not with sex. Not with screams. With silence. With heels. And now it was time to finish what I started. The audit. It began with an email. Subject line. Urgent. Stone and Weller. Internal audit request. Sender. External Legal Compliance Division. I'd scheduled it myself. Of course, no one knew that. Not even Nathaniel. You see, months ago, I'd started documenting everything. Every unusual expense he approved. Every wire transfer with no explanation. Every department adjustment I subtly encouraged him to make under my influence. I'd cataloged conversations, collected receipts, saved screenshots. Not because I wanted to destroy him, but because I wanted to own the explosion. Control is a currency and blackmail is the stock market. By the time HR was randomly notified of inconsistencies in Nathaniel's expense approvals and power restructuring, I'd already fed half the board exactly what they needed to push him out, without getting their hands dirty. When the meeting was called, I sat in the front row of the executive conference room. Calm, polished, serene. He walked in late, eyes tired, tie missing, shirt slightly wrinkled. For the first time since I met him, he looked human, not powerful, frail. Mr. Carter, said Tanya, her voice steady, the board has reviewed the findings. He didn't sit. He just stood there, silent, watching the faces he once controlled now staring at him like a virus under glass. This audit revealed multiple violations of internal financial protocols, she continued. Misappropriation of funds, unapproved budget increases, breaches of ethical conduct. He glanced at me then, just once, and I gave him nothing. No smile, no signal, no remorse, just silence. I didn't misuse anything, he finally said, voice breaking. These decisions were made with strategic intent. Tanya cut him off. Decisions like tripling the assistant discretionary fund with no approval, or paying for luxury vehicles from administrative expenses. He tried to speak, but he was already drowning. This company can't afford scandal, the CFO said. We're prepared to offer you a resignation package. Quiet exit. Severance. But it ends today. Silence fell again. His hands trembled. He looked at me again as if begging for an anchor. I leaned forward, laced my fingers, and said calmly, You should take the deal, Mr. Carter. It's generous. And just like that, the man who once ruled skyscrapers, who made billion-dollar decisions over morning espresso, nodded like a schoolboy being scolded, and walked out. Not with rage. Not with resistance. With nothing. The rise. 1 week later, they offered me his office. Of course they did. I was already doing half his job by then, quietly solving problems, guiding internal affairs, keeping the HR team smooth and silent. I knew where the bodies were buried. I knew who was loyal. I knew how to smile without ever showing my teeth. But I didn't take his office. I took Leah's. She was demoted officially for performance concerns. Unofficially? For being dumb enough to think I was a threat she could outtweet. I wanted to sit where she once sat. Not because I needed the space, but because I wanted her to watch. Watch me answer calls she used to take. Watch me wear the badge she once guarded. Watch me rise like smoke while she sank into paperwork and irrelevance. By then, the whispers had turned to awe. She's brilliant. She never speaks unless she has to. Do do you think she'll be the next VP? I didn't answer any of them. I just kept walking, always in heels, always calm, always composed, because I wasn't chasing power anymore. I was the power, the last gift. 3 months later, a package arrived at my apartment. No return label, just a plain black box with a crimson ribbon. I knew who it was from before I touched it. Inside, a pair of stilettos, 6 inches, midnight blue, velvet, embroidered with the words, "For the one who made me kneel." There was a note folded beneath the tissue paper. Handwritten, "Delaney, I see you in my dreams now. Not as the girl in heels, but as the woman who cracked my spine and made it feel like release. They think I'm gone, finished, but I'm not. I'm building again, quietly, from the ground up. But I'll never forget what it felt like to be under you. To ache, to need, to want to be nothing while you stood above me like the storm you are. You didn't destroy me. You freed me. N. I folded the note. Slowly, calmly, then I slipped the heels on, walked to the full-length mirror, and smiled. Not because I missed him, but because even in exile, he still belonged to me. The closure. People always ask how I did it. How I went from being the assistant to the woman no one dares interrupt. They think it was beauty, sex, manipulation. And yes, those helped. But the truth is far simpler. I listened. I watched. I waited. And I struck like lightning wrapped in silk. I never raised my voice. I never played victim. I never begged for a seat at the table. I brought my own chair, my own wine, my own damn contract. And then, I made them sign it in blood, because I am not just the woman in heels. I am the storm they never saw coming. And every time one of them steps onto the elevator, hears the soft click of leather against marble floors. They remember, she didn't fuck her way to the top. She stepped on the bodies, and smiled doing it.